Good evening, everyone. It looks like summer everywhere. And yesterday was the longest day of the year, the summer solstice. And the word solstice actually means sun standing still. It comes from Latin, and it's the point at which the sun seems to be standing still. Although, of course, we know it's not standing still, but it's either reached its highest point or its lowest point. For us in the Northern Hemisphere, it's the highest point yesterday. And I find this really interesting that the ancient peoples who gave it in our languages gave it that name. At least that's the name that it is in English and in French. I don't know what it is in Portuguese and in Polish. Solstice. In Portuguese, do you say that?
Solstice.
Yeah, okay. And in Polish? You don't know. Okay.
The summer and the spring and the autumn is przesilenie, but it's continue.
I love that. It's one of my favorite days of the year. And in France, for more than 40 years now, they do what they call the Fête de la Musique, the day of music on the 21st. And so everywhere in all the villages and the towns and the cities and pubs and parks and on street corners and schools and everywhere, there's music to celebrate the summer, to celebrate music, to celebrate the summer solstice, day when the sun stands still. And so it's the day when there is the most light and the least darkness. And then in the winter, it's the day when there is the most darkness and the least light. And if you think of it, this also has to do with our Zen roots and from China and Chinese traditions with yin and yang, and the drawing that we use that we're very familiar with is when there's a circle and part of it is white and part of it is black. The yin is the darkness and the yang is the light, the white. And it's hard for us to separate when one begins and when the other, when the darkness ends and the light begins and vice versa. And in that circle drawing, it's also difficult to tell. And within each of those shapes, I should have brought an image to share, but I think you're familiar with it. There is, like in the black part, there is a small white dot. And in the light white part, there's a small black dot. So each contains part of the other. Or as we say in our chant of the relative and the absolute, within darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. As soon as you start looking for it, well, then you're missing the dark. So if we were sitting here, looking for the bell to ring, and we all know this experience, we're actually caught up in the anticipation and the projecting towards something else, and we're not really present with what is, the bell not ringing. And the same goes with the light and the dark, and the summer and the spring, and the summer and the fall and the autumn, all of these dualities that we have. that we are familiar with. And I came upon a quote from an American poet, environmentalist, who I think recently died, but his name is Wendell Berry. He died, I think he died recently, last year, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong, but for some reason I think that. But this quote is interesting because I feel like it applies to my situation and the Sangha's situation at this moment. So I will read you the quote and see what, we'll see what comes up. And it has to do with this darkness and this light, and not looking for the light in the darkness, etc. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. This applies to our practice. If you do koan practice, you know that when you come to this point where you don't know anymore where to look, you don't know anymore what this is about. If we pay attention, maybe we have really come to the real work of the koan. And if we really pay attention, then we will realize something. Until that point, we're involved with knowing, even if we think we don't, we're involved with trying to know, or hanging on to what we do know, or hanging on to the light or the dark, let's say. And then when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. So now we really are on the path, we could say, to a certain extent. And I say this applies to our Sangha at this moment, to myself, but also to the Sangha for several reasons. Because as we near, so it's been 19 years that Wildflower has, or at least since I received transmission, and a group of people have been sitting with me. It wasn't called Wildflower at first, but for 19 years, that's what's happened. And we've more or less done the same thing. Of course, we've evolved. And many people have come, many people have gone. All kinds of things have happened. At the time that I started, right after I received transmission almost, I started going to Portugal. So it's almost simultaneous that. And yet what we've done in Portugal has changed. What we've done in Paris has changed. We gave ourselves a name. I now have a successor. So someone among the Sangha evolved to become a teacher himself. Lots of things have changed. And I feel at this moment, which you may realize because we sent out a survey to all of you asking you, well, we need to renew. What do you think? We've kind of come to a point where, well, we no longer know what to do. We no longer know which way to go. Should we sit on this night? Should we sit online? Should we sit here? Should we not sit? Should we do talks? Should we not do talks? Should we do longer retreats? Should we not do retreats? All kinds of questions, which I am experiencing as something very creative and a lot like what Wendell Berry said of, when I no longer know what to do, I've come to what the real work is. And when I no longer know where to go, I've come to the real journey. And I personally love that space. I don't think I always have, but throughout my Zen practice and my writing practice, I've learned through hard experience often, because it usually comes with some difficulty, to appreciate that moment. And I know that's where something real happens. Not that everything we've been doing for 19 years is not real, but it has evolved in a series of moments like this where we don't know what to do, we don't know where to go. And of course, it's not total darkness, because we know what to do, we know to sit, we know to come together, to meet, we know we want to be together, to sit together. I know that my vow is to accompany you on your paths, collective and individual. All of that I know. It's more, what does that mean and how does that happen? And where do we go together on that path? Where is our path taking us? That is, I don't know. And even in terms of Sangha, we're confronted with this, and I'm assuming that's why I talked to Joao and Tiago after this meeting, because the place where we wanted to have a summer retreat, we don't have enough people to fill it. So we have to find another place. We're not canceling the retreat, but we need to find some other place to do it. And I kind of like this idea. I know for Tiago and Joao, it's not like it is for me, because they're responsible. They feel much more responsible for finding a place. And we'll see what they have to say after. But in the sense that to go back to the origins of our practice, and particularly in China, so what we think of as the golden age of Zen, 9th century, 8th and 9th century China, that's a long time ago. And in that culture, many of the practitioners were what they called artists intellectuals. And actually, they weren't that much different than us, but they had a position in their society that was, well, didn't have all of this, the complications that we have in our society. They probably had other ones, but it wasn't so much about earning money and having a, you know, a place, becoming famous or becoming known or putting oneself forward or anything like that. And they, their notion of the practice was to sit together, even sometimes sipping wine, or what is the equivalent of wine, because wine, it was thought of as not unlike meditation, that it eased the attachment to the ego and self, the idea of self. I mean, I'm not talking about like getting completely wasted, but that was part of their practice sometimes. And then they would, you know, they would gaze together at the mountain landscape, at the moon. Mountain landscape was actually a term that meant to practice. And that meant that they, which is, this speaks to me because this is what we do. That meant that they shared something deeper than their individual identities and friendships and even love that we normally think of in our relationships. By sitting together and gazing at the mountains or the stars or the sun or the moon, they were sharing, this was an expression of sharing something deeper than what we usually share with people out there in the world. And that led to a profound sense of Sangha. And I think we can identify, we can recognize this, because we have connections, at least I know in my 30 years of practice, I have really deep connections with Sangha and with people that I practiced with for years in my teacher Sangha and with all of you. That, you know, if we were out there in the regular world, mingling together and we didn't share this practice, we probably wouldn't have that deep connection that we have. My Dharma brother and I, Frank, used to say that if we didn't have that shared, profound, that we weren't sharing something deeper than just usual friendship, we wouldn't have lasted living together in that community for probably more than a few weeks, you know, a few months maybe, let's say. But it was the fact that we shared this deep contemplation of the stars and the moon and the mountains and the earth and each other and ourselves, that's what we shared. And that's so deep. And that is what Sangha is. And I liked, you know, I like this idea that we don't know, you know, we've come to this point where we no longer know what to do. So about the summer retreat, and maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself because I haven't heard what João and Tiago have to say. Maybe there's something new from the last time we communicated. From the very beginning, when they first told me this, I felt this deep, sense of something right, and that coming together just to gaze at the mountains and the sun and the grass and the, just to come back to that very basic, deep sharing that we do. The place where we went, you know, where we go in the summer is fabulous, where we went last summer. There's a swimming pool, super comfortable. The kitchen isn't great, but outdoor space, it's a really great place, but it's too expensive for us if we don't have, you know, a certain amount of people. So I'm heartened by this. It's as if this, what's happening for the summer retreat and what's happening for the Sangha and what as a whole, and I suppose it has a lot to do with what's happening for me. We don't know where we are anymore. We don't know where we're going anymore. And that's so rich. That's so exciting. Creative, just really creative. And it seems like it's bringing us back to the real journey. It's like, oh yeah, of course. Back to what we call not knowing. Back to what we call letting go, maybe. You know, letting go of our fixed ideas. Because it's very easy to get attached to a fixed ideas. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not complicated. You know, we've tried two other places and they're not available. So we have a third option, and maybe they're telling me about that option tonight. I don't know. We've tried, two other places, three other places, and it's not possible. So maybe they're telling me about the fourth place. So are we, you know, now it's the summer solstice and this moment of light and dark and sun standing still. And it's as if this brilliant light that's filling the day. And the farther north you go, the more that it fills. So it's more light here than it is in Lisbon later in the day. You know? And surprisingly, when was it? It was Tuesday night. I don't know what I was doing, but I was having dinner with my family, and then at some point, someone turned on the television, and as Seu knows, there was a football match, and Portugal was playing. And Portugal was playing in Iceland. And it was past 10 p.m. here in Paris. And that football match looked like it was the middle of the afternoon. it was incredible to see the light at that 10 p.m. I don't know if Iceland is in which time zone they're in, if they're in the UK, Portugal time zone, or if they're in European, Central European, but in any case, it was night, and it looked like it was about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, maybe. So these are, it's relative, the amount of light, but there is, we know that where we are on the earth at this moment and the placement of the sun is more than it is yesterday. It was more light than today, even if it's just a fraction of a bit. And yet we can't find where the night and the day starts. The infinitely tiny movements make it so that it takes 6 months for the sun to reach its bottom point related to us. We're the ones who are moving, to get to the darkest point. And yet all that time it's moving, even though we think now it's standing still, but it is moving even when it's standing still. And in the traditional, you know, you've heard me talk about this Dogen quote about rivers and mountains, right? Rivers are rivers and mountains are mountains, and then rivers are not rivers and mountains are not mountains, and then rivers are rivers and mountains are mountains. Well, actually, that term rivers and mountains is not just some obscure thing that he pulled out of the hat and said, this is... Rivers and mountains actually is, in the traditional Chinese Chan practice, a term that is used to, it means landscape, but it's used to mean what is contemplated in this practice. And you can see that in Chinese art as well. You know, some of those beautiful Chinese paintings where there's mountains and then sky, and the mountains aren't like colored in, but you can see the lines. And they picked those because rivers represent the yin, the darkness, and mountains represent the yang, the white, the light. The earth is like coming up to meet the sky, which is empty. And so this rivers and mountains landscape contemplation is, it also applies to us. We are the rivers and the mountains. So when we're contemplating the rivers and the mountains, it's not outside us, it's here too. This is what we're looking at. And as I said before once, that term, actually, I think I said it when we were in a retreat, so in Fontainebleau, that the ideogram for Chan, which is Zen in Chinese, actually means altar or sacrifice to rivers and mountains, which is quite interesting. That it doesn't mean, of course, it's a term that was taken from the Chinese Dhyana practice to the Indian practice. But it is sacrifice to the rivers and mountains, to rivers and mountains is to let go, renounce oneself, and to contemplate the landscape of ourselves, the wildness of us and other and everything. And that wildness is also this point we are at this moment of, we don't know what to do, we don't know where to go. That's the wildness. we enter, we can open to that wildness in that space of not knowing where to go and not knowing what to do. And our sitting practice is about that. So we honor that landscape, that wildness, that rivers and mountains that we are and that everything is. So we don't know where we, what was that quote? We don't know what to do. What was it? Again, I wrote it down. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. So here we are. We don't know what to do. This is our work. And that when we no longer which way to go, we've come to our real journey. That's where it's all open. Vast emptiness, you know, nothing holy. So I think I will stop there and open it to questions, comments, sharing of any kind. You can even tell me what you did last week when I wasn't here. You know what you did.
It was the beginning of not knowing where you are not present and Joa not present and okay, something new.
So what did you do?
We did a circle, Joa. Organize the circle, tell the how to do the circle to us, I think. And we did the circle. Yeah, it was.
Great.
But it's also good to have these surprises sometimes. Without under the feet, we don't have nothing. We have well, we are, and we go, but it's another thing.
Well, yes, and you were together, and you contemplated the rivers and the mountains in your words and hearts, no? Nice. I'm glad to hear that. Marlon?
Evening, everyone. I already knew it is probably I wouldn't go to the retreat this year. And not the same thing that where I stand now after hearing that this extraordinary quote, when we no longer know where to go, that's where our journey begins. But a kind of it, I had a moment where I thought about it, oh, it will be my first summer retreat that I am going to miss. Wow, what, how can it be? Because it's really important. Well, as you said, I, I was kind of predisposition to contemplate this in the summer, not to be with Sangha, not to be with you in presence. After COVID, we had three times, I think. After this, we were together. And of course, last summer, it was a kind of the apex of something so beautiful we had together, we know it. Maybe it's the yin and yang this summer. We will have other great thing, but not like in the same place. But this practice, wherever we are going to do it with ourselves together or in another place, we don't know. And we don't know this year, and neither for the next year. We only know that we had those moments together. We had several retreats where we have been. And this practice is really extraordinary because when you quote Dogen, rivers are mountains, rivers are rivers, mountains are mountains, then rivers are no longer rivers and no longer mountains, and then rivers are rivers. Where else in the world would I have the opportunity to hear those things? It's extraordinary what we talk and what we would do all together. So I hope we will readjust this little thing and see what life will bring us. But this is really huge in my life for me and for you, I think so. Thank you.
Thank you. It's true. Where else? Where else but here? Yeah.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
Why have we changed the time, the place of not in August, but in July? Why have we changed it?
Because the place, Neturena, in order to give us a good price, we couldn't do it in August because they make a lot of money in August because it's holiday. They rent it for holiday people, you know, vacationers. And so we agreed on that week, which was a quote, better price, but it's still very expensive for us unless we have, like we did last year, a lot of people. So we had to change it. Yeah. Because I don't know, do you think, say, that that makes a difference? That some people.
I think there are people who don't come because it's not the usual time. I don't know. I'm not sure, but I think.
Well, throughout the years, we've tried different. When we first started doing the summer retreat, people said, oh, don't do it in August because I'll be on holiday. So we did it in July, and they said, oh, well, I can't come in July because I'm not on holiday. So it's kind of a catch-22, you know. So we started doing it that first week in August, and that seemed to work for many years. Although the first one we did, I think, was the last week in July, was like this, the very first one we did in 2007, I think, was like this.
Okay, Anna, is it you or me? Not sure.
It can be. It can be you, Marek. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry about the headache that you have that I didn't know about, and I hope you something somehow it will be resolved for good. What I thought hearing about Hiroshi saying it, and when I reflected about my own moments like this that I know very well, that I don't know which way to go, this is something that we would like to add oftentimes, and we don't know whether we would make it, but we somehow we don't want to jinx it and don't say it, but sometimes it's also in the back of our head. So I'm glad I can at least be around you. I don't know if I can be of any use for you, but I'm glad that that we met again in such a time. And on a practical level, I would like to because I think you have a summer break in those Zoom practice, don't you? And if so, are you going to have again in a week the same practice as today?
Yes, we will probably end the July 14th would be the last.
Uh-huh. So still the end of June and first 2 weeks of.
Yeah, and then we will start up again in September.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So it's like 6 weeks that we're off. Although some, like maybe not last summer, but there have been summers when some people have maintained the morning sitting for sometimes. Mm-hmm. Some, not the evening because that's a little complicated, but in the morning, if there are people, we will say, if people want to maintain the morning, that's fine.
Okay, so I don't know if it's appropriate expression the floor is yours, Anna, or is it possible to say in such a setting this?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Hello, everybody. What I would like to share with you. I feel that we are really more than lucky to have this opportunity, like Marlene said, to talk and to listen to such a subjects and the way Hiroshi present them to us. So what I want to share is more or less what Marlene brought here. But in other way, I feel, for example, about this quote of Wendley Berry, I kind of feel that I would like to know some kind of context where that quote came, because I feel that it can be so many things when we say such a, when we say that, you know, it can be, it reminds me so many things, so many moments of my life and of my experience. And that's why I say that it can be so many things. And the other quote about mountains and rivers, also the same, but they both take me to childhood and to youth too, to moments of my childhood, my youth, and also experiences of listen to children saying such things and listen to young people saying such a thing. So there is these three feelings I have from your talk, Emiroshi. Well, more than three things, there are many things, but I feel lucky and blessed to be here and to share, to be able to be here and to listen to you, but special about Wendley Berry, it comes to me that it can be so many things that I don't know what thing should I feel about this quote.
Yeah, I understand, and I can't tell you which work of his this came from. You know, I don't think he's dead, but it came. He is a poet, writer. He lives in rural Kentucky, like out far away from cities and things, and he really is. His work focuses on like the holiness of life and the beauty of everyday things, kind of. Although he's not a Zen practitioner, he's very old. That's why I thought he was dead. But for some reason, recently people were talking about him. That's why I think he's dead, but I don't know. He's very old. And this quote I came across in some information about the Zen Peacemaker community. So I don't know where it came from exactly, like what work of his it came from. That said, I would just say trust something about it for yourself, you know. And that he's even saying, you know, when we don't know what to do, then that's where we go, you know. So of course, sometimes it's important to know and find the whole work and see what he was talking about. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's enough, just this.
For me, it's a kind of I don't get the right word, but it's. It's a circle, you know, it's a never-ending thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And a koan, you know, it's a koan, actually.
Yes.
Really cool.
But I have this feeling of having heard this from different people.
Probably, yeah. And something about it resonates for you.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'd say trust that.
Yeah. Thank you.
A whole bunch of things come up from this. First of all, it reminded me that there were several years oh, three or four or five, that I kind of followed Frank Roshi around looking for where he wanted to settle down, because now they're in Catsongs and it's perfect and it's really ideal for a retreat, but he didn't find it right away. And I have very fond memories of those different, there were, one place was called Dreamland, which was kind of dreamy. And one place, there was a discotheque or a kind of dancing place not far. And one night, Frank and I and somebody else went there and we danced all night long. We came back about 5 o'clock in the morning and I felt very refreshed all day until about five in the afternoon. I was completely out. We had so much fun. Belen, seems to me that the town was called. These were places in Belgium. I had no idea where I was. I'd been to, and not French-speaking Belgium, in Flanders, where they will not speak French. I don't know if they don't speak French, but they won't speak French. A lot of them spoke English, but nobody was. And I go, I can get lost in my apartment. So this was quite an adventure with my paper that I printed. Now take a left on route 245 and all this stuff. It was so much fun. So, I mean, it's also a lot of work to find a place, especially it's June and this, we're talking about a vacation period, but I have such fond memories of that period because we were always, sort of thrown into a new situation. There was the place where there were 10 of us, five men and five women, and we were it with some kind of Christian brothers who lived there in this, and they did the cooking, and the food was awful. It was just atrocious. We kind of, everybody would eat and not look at each other, like, ooh, what are we eating? But we had a really good time and laughed a lot and stuff. That period was so, I don't know, creative. There was something really, you had to adapt to each one. And the other thing it calls up for me, I had the funniest feeling that we've talked about this before. I don't know if maybe it wasn't or wasn't with you. And I never get his name right. Nobel Prize, V.S. DePaul. He wrote a book about the magic of traveling that I don't remember what it's called, but he went to Ivory Coast supposedly to meet some important mucky muck and he got deviated. He met a woman who said, oh no, don't go there. I'll show you something much more interesting. And every part of the trip, he gets deviated from what he's supposed to do, but it's a million times better than in his view. It's a whole lot more interesting than what was planned. And I travel like that in Africa for years. And it's so exciting. It's hard, it's work. I mean, you have to stay on your toes because you don't know where you're sleeping. But it's a very interesting book from that point of view of saying, you know, the minute you get into this, you're in sort of a magic zone. So stay attentive because maybe the woman you didn't like knows somebody that's going to find your hotel, sort of thing. Really interesting. So I know that you all have a hard time finding getting this together, but it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, thank you.
One more thing, does anybody else, when you find yourself on the crossroad, is there anybody else here who uses the I Ching, the Book of Changes, consulting? Because I realize I'm, you know, kind of addicted, maybe because I was for so many years far from the teacher and I didn't have any real person to talk to. So I realized that this book somehow a substitute for its wisdom for a real teacher that was not around, but So Marlene, you are the only one who knows it. And
this is not so systematic as you said, not in the crossroads, but twice a year. I remember, and I don't know. I'm going to do it.
So me much more often. For those of you who doesn't know it, it's a very old book that exists in many interpretation, and it predates Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism in China, and it's somehow I even found some Buddhist versions of I Ching among the other things. But okay, thank you.
Carla, you had your hand up.
Yeah. Right, everyone. I was listening to you, and immediately came to my mind a book I read from Pema Chodron. The name in English, I think, is When Everything Falls Apart. I have it in Portuguese. And I was introduced to this concept or idea of not knowing and not having any floor under my feet and nothing to hold on, by chance, in a time of my life where I was feeling that way. because I knew I didn't want to go on working on that place. I knew that, and I didn't quit the job, but I am a public funcionário público.
Public servant.
Yes, and I can't ask for a unpaid leave, so that's what I did. But my intention was to find other thing, so I didn't have nothing, no idea where to go. And I found this book in the first place. It was a very special time in my life, because when I remind that time, I felt like magic was happening every day. I met the right people. I met the right, I found the right circumstances, and I felt so alive using many of my some of my talents that I didn't use in my daily life. I did many years ago a training course for teaching yoga, but I never gave classes to people. So in that period, I found many people that wanted to have classes with me, and I have the full house of people attending to my classes. So many things happened. And then, well, 3 months after, I found a new job on a new town. It's more like the place where I really wanted to live. So I think it was a very special time in my life, and I look forward for something similar to this to happen again. So, but it happens by chance, I think the main thing is to decide something, and because I decided I didn't want to go on that life that I had with that job, things started to happen. And one thing I really wanted to know your opinion about, I think I had faith. I don't know the concept of faith in Buddhism, how people react to that, but what I felt was faith. Just trusting without knowing. So I would like to know about that concept in Buddhism.
Well, I think that trust is the word that is best, applies best. trust in the way, trust in the universe. You know, sometimes we say the universe will provide with everything you need. And when you say you had to decide, it's true that you made this decision. At the same time, you were open to what arose. And sometimes the decision to like not have a job or something is made for us. Naturena made a decision for us in this case. So then the question is, well, then what do we do? How do we respond? And even after your decision, it was, how do you respond? And you were open to responding to whatever came up, in a sense. And it's such a great experience that you tell, that it was so rich. Mm-hmm. And it was really more than you could have imagined. And that, believe me, you can trust that happens. That really yeah. does. We are open to it, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
We are about out of time, so we'll have to stop. Thank you all. And we will chant the vows.